Welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. We talked with Alex Marlow. We'll play that interview coming up in just a little bit. We kicked off the show talking again about accountability and America First, and how people are, conservatives are very frustrated, to say the least, right now, if not angry or apoplectic or aggressively apathetic. I think that may be part of it. Like aggressively apathetic. I like that word. And it's because we're so far away from America First, and we're so far away from true accountability in all things. So we gave a bunch of examples of that, and how, what do we do with it? That was in the first segment. I want to play here, though, the first segment of the second hour, where we talked about unity and how we have just, like, unity is way overrated. get rid of that being a virtue in and of itself. Unity around truth is great, but so is divisiveness around truth. Truth is the value. Truth is the virtue. Truth is what we need, not unity. We talk about that here. Happy Thursday, best day of the week. Thank you for yesterday's show and for listening to that Tom McClintock interview. A bunch of emails about it. I think my lesson of it is people are so over it. And people are really interested in America. It's so obvious to me how it's all about America First right now. And people are sick of the lack of accountability. It's lack of America First and lack of accountability. We spent the first hour of the show talking about that. You can go back and listen to the podcast to hear the breakdown and analysis of that. But I'm grateful to you for listening yesterday. And then it's also family first. You know, 2 days ago, we talked with Tim Carney. I've thought about this Tim Carney interview a little bit. I hope it was helpful. It did help solidify some other things too, right? A policy is the best for America. That's the America First, right? It's the best for America. And does this policy center families and kids? And if it doesn't center around families and kids, then we're not, no good. No bueno, not going to work. So I look forward to putting that in practice. Let me share this here. So all these headlines going around against House Speaker Mike Johnson. And I said when he was first named Speaker, it's going to be great fun to watch the media try to destroy him because he's a Christian. And not only a Christian, but like believes Christian things and lives a Christian life and uses Christian words naturally. Like it's very authentic. And the media can't stand that, of course, but they didn't know it at first. And then they figured it out. And now they're like digging in everything. And they're just like, it's great. Fine. And I think Mike Johnson is the man to withstand this assault. So he was criticized for yesterday. Oh, here's one. This is a good headline. Mike Johnson tied to publishing house. This is a real headline. Johnson tied to publishing house, which is a weird thing. What do you mean tied to it? How's he tied to it? With content. All right, now listen, this publishing house, very dangerous. You can tell because they have content that, ready? You want to know what the content is? Tied with content against gays and women who get abortions. So this is a publishing house. And I haven't clicked the article. I don't know what it is. But there's some publishing house that's against homosexuality and abortion. Wow. Heaven forbid we actually have a Christian who believes Christian things. Speaker of the House, depraved America deserves God's wrath. I think we're in God's wrath. How about this one? Calls separation of church and state a misnomer. Oh no. Can you believe it? Can you believe this monster? Here's what he said about that.
I think it was the first day that you had been sworn in.
Sorry.
It appeared.
I put it on 2X. I got to put it back. There we go.
I think it was the first day that you had been sworn in. It appeared that you had were praying on the floor of Congress with a number of other congressmen. No. And there is a question about the separation of church and state. We often talk on this show about folks, about whether religion should play a role inside a company, whether people should be allowed to pray inside a company. There's one thing to pray outside and to have your faith, and there's a great importance in that. But how do you think about that, and how do you think about the public perception of that?
Listen, faith, our deep religious heritage and tradition, is a big part of what it means to be an American. When the founders set this system up, they wanted a vibrant expression of faith in the public square because they believed that a general moral consensus and virtue was necessary to maintain this grand experiment in self-governance that we created, a government of, by, and for the people. We don't have a king in charge. We don't have a middleman. So we've got to keep morality amongst us so that we have accountability. And so they wanted faith to be a big part of that. The separation of church and state is a misnomer. People misunderstand it. Of course, it comes from a phrase that was in a letter that Jefferson wrote. It's not in the Constitution. And what he was explaining is they did not want the government to encroach upon the church, not that they didn't want principles of faith to have influence on our public life. It was exactly the opposite. Washington said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And John Adams came next, and he said, our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. They knew that it would be important to maintain our system. And that's why I think we need more of that. Not an establishment of any national religion, but we need everybody's vibrant expression of faith because it's such an important part of who we are as a nation.
Okay, so that's perfect. So I can't wait for this. The more they attack him, the more opportunities he has for stuff like that. And that's a wonderful thing. All right, so this clip was featured on Breitbart.com. This is the senator from Georgia, which is bonkers that he's a Raphael Warnock, Reverend Raphael Warnock. Now, before I play this clip of him on MSNBC, a little quick background on the Reverend. I don't make it a practice to declare who is a Christian and who is not. But Raphael Warnock has nothing to do with the Bible, like not even close. We can give some policy specifics. He's pro-gay marriage. He's pro-abortion. And those are two issues that would need to be addressed. But even from a theological standpoint, he is from such a pseudo-Christian tradition that has been so watered down that it bears no resemblance to the Bible nearly in any way. 2 years ago, he tweeted out on Easter. He said, the meaning of Easter is more transcendent than the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Whether you are a Christian or not, through a commitment to helping others, we are able to save ourselves. That's not it. Listen, if you want that to be a thing, sure, that's not Christianity. The holiday is definitely about the resurrection of Jesus, and it's nothing about helping. It's not about helping others, and it's certainly not about saving ourselves. Okay, that's like just not Christianity. This is a guy who has three degrees from Union Theological Seminary. He is a Master of Divinity, a Master of Philosophy, and a Doctorate of Philosophy from Union Theological Seminary in New York City. This is one of the wokest places on the planet. This is a seminary, a Christian seminary, that accepts Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus and students who identify as pagan. They have groups on their seminary campus, seminarians for reproductive justice. They have a caucus for queer people of color in their seminary. They have chapel services that have been done, that has done many pagan services. This is a real tweet from 2019. Today in chapel, this is a tweet from the Union Theological Seminary associated with Columbia University. This is their official tweet. Today in chapel, we confessed to plants. Together, we held our grief, joy, regret, hope, guilt, and sorrow in prayer offering them to the beings who sustain us, but whose gift we too often fail to honor. Okay. It's a confession. Oh, then what do you confess to the plants in your life? Okay. That is pagan nonsense. That is not Christianity. They also hosted an ice melting pagan ritual in this chapel. So that is the place where this reverend got his multiple degrees. He spent way too much time on this campus. So it is no surprise that a three-time graduate of this seminary would have, at best, a loose handle of the Christian scriptures to the point where, you know, Easter's not really about the resurrection of Jesus. It's about saving ourselves, something that Christians can't do. But whatever. I could go on. I just wanted to share that just so you have an idea of what kind of reverend this is. Think Jeremiah Wright. Remember that name? Ooh, haven't heard that in a while. I can't ever say or hear the terms chickens come home to roost without thinking Jeremiah Wright. He's ruined that term. He was Barack Obama's spiritual counselor back in 2008. All right, so Raphael Warnock, he's talking to, what's her name, Jen Psaki, about his relationship with Jimmy Carter. And he said, Jimmy and Rosalind Carter are two of his favorite people on earth. Okay. He said, here is a man who demonstrates how you have faith and how it ought to work and come alive. He's used it not as a weapon, but as a bridge. Okay, we'll pick it up here.
Does it bother you that the evangelical community seems to be... continue to very much be behind Donald Trump? Is that surprising?
It's a deep contradiction. Mm-hmm. It's a deep contradiction. And I think that when the history of this period is written, we will have a lot to say about that. You cannot account for some of the divisive forces at work in our country, mm-hmm. sadly, without reference to what's happening in huge segments of the American church. I come out of a tradition that has always tried to use our faith to bring us together. I like the way Jimmy Carter used his faith. Mm-hmm. I like the way Martin Luther King Jr. and Ella Baker and white brothers and sisters like James Reeb in the midst of the civil rights movement, how they use their faith, and so many others in this moment.
Okay. So evangelicals, being an evangelical Christian and supporting Donald Trump is a deep contradiction. Apparently deeper than being a pro-gay marriage, pro-abortion pastor. No contradiction there. It's totally fine. But supporting Donald Trump for president, big problem. But the theme here of what he's talking about is very important for us to get right. He's talking about divisiveness. You just heard things like, oh, I come from a tradition that's all about unity, bringing people together, building bridges, this nonsense. You are going to hear this preached as we get closer and closer to the election more and more. Oh, you can't support Donald Trump. He's divisive. We've done it all before. He's divisive. He's divisive. He's divisive. This is they're manipulating you. Do not fall for this. This prayer, this preaching of the sin of divisiveness is coming from the most divisive people imaginable. That is our American media. Oh, we can't vote for him. He's divisive. Coming from the most divisive force in our country is our media. Quick sidebar. I'll get back to this. Last week we talked about this term that I just came across, France profond. It's like profound, deep France is what this means. And it's an old term. I didn't make it up. It's been around for hundreds of years. And it's the idea that there are these rural French towns who have maintained their deep French identity. This profound, vast, rich identity. And no matter how wacky Paris gets, and how globalist and how cosmopolitan and how weird Paris is, the people of France can always fall back on the true French identity that is still found and kept safe and secure in deep France. And we explored this idea a little bit. Was it last week in honor of Veterans Day? And we had this concept in America too. Conservatives used to call it real America. We didn't call it deep America, although I like that too. Real America. And it's these places in this country, real America, that is in contrast to our cities that have absolutely lost their minds. And it's important to keep real America like a wall around it so that it can stay as a deposit of who we really are. If we ever need to fall back on it, we can. So it's real America. And I thought about Sarah Palin. She used to talk about real America a lot back in 2008. So I Googled Sarah Palin, real America. And one of the first things to pop up was an old clip from The Daily Show. And I'm thinking about this now because of divisiveness. You want to talk about divisiveness? The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Remember that show? One of the most harmful forces in our country in the last 20 years was The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And this comedian reporter went to Wasilla, Alaska. This is where Sarah Palin was the mayor. Population 10,000. And this reporter goes out, comedian goes out there and just mercilessly mocked this place and the people. Without mercy, just ruthlessly mocked everything and everyone there. And it was very mean-spirited. There's great value in pointing out hypocrisy, but this was cruel. And the Daily Show viewers loved it. They loved it when Sarah Palin talked about small town America and the importance of it. And then the reporter goes to Wasilla and mocks the mom and pop general stores and shows a picture of a Target and mocks the Purple Mountain Peaks and shows a picture of the local Lowe's and talks about friendly old Main Street. And it's a 4-lane highway bypass. He says, oh, Wasilla has it all. And then he talked about the people in the town and just made fun of them all. And it's very hard to watch. Jon Stewart and The Daily Show did a ton to destroy the inherent unity of this country. But I bring it up because there was never an honest effort to understand what real America or deep America means and who these people are and what their value is. And what they value and what they hold dear. And there's no effort. This is what bothered me the most. No effort to understand or reflect about why the mom and pop general store no longer exists. Right? We're just going to mock Wasilla because it has a Target. And we're not going to question why the mom and pop general store doesn't exist anymore because of globalization and high taxes and other economic and social policies of the left over the last 50 years. I'm certain Wasilla once had a mom and pop general store. I'm certain they once had a local hardware store. Why don't they anymore? No effort to understand that, just mocking. Just this mocking. Jon Stewart and New Yorkers are way better than you in Wasilla, Alaska, and all small towns across the country. We're so much better than you. And I despise these people, and less other people. This attitude, I despise this attitude, this holier than thou attitude. Anyway, back to my point about being divisive. You're gonna be lectured to a lot about how Trump is so divisive. And then these same godless heathens have the gall to tell you that Christians should be more uniting. And therefore should elect a more uniting person to be president, like Joe Biden. Who are you out of your mind? Now, I'm not going to do a sermon here, but Christianity is not uniting. It's not. Martin Luther King Jr., Warnock mentioned him a second ago. Martin Luther King Jr. was not uniting. Martin Luther King Jr. was extremely divisive. He said, "You people are terrible racists." I mean, he was uniting in the sense that he encouraged people to unite around the promises of our founding fathers that all men are created equal. Hey, come join me and unite around this thing, this thing that is good. He had two principles that Martin Luther King Jr. held up, two principles. One, men are made in the image of God. That's from the Bible. And then all men are created equal. That's in our Declaration of Independence. And he held those two things up and he said, if you're not uniting around these principles, then you're wrong. That's not uniting. He was so divisive. Martin Luther King Jr. was so divisive, they murdered him. Martin Luther King Jr. was so divisive. I love this. Oh, we need to be more like Martin Luther King Jr. He was so uniting. No, he wasn't. The FBI was again, they like wanted to kill him. People hated Martin Luther King Jr. There's nothing uniting about Martin Luther King Jr.'s message. Here's what it is. People confuse being right with being uniting. They think that if someone's right, then they're uniting. No. Sometimes being right is, most of the time, being right is extremely divisive. Martin Luther King Jr. Was right, but he wasn't uniting. Jesus wasn't uniting. They killed him. They killed his disciples. They killed his followers. What was uniting about their message? It wasn't uniting at all. It was uniting for those who believe it, but it was quite divisive to those who don't. When Jesus in Matthew 23 goes around and gives the woes, the seven woes to the Pharisees, woe to you, woe to you, woe to you. There's nothing uniting about that. There's nothing uniting about the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. That's not uniting. There's nothing uniting about there's one way to heaven. That is extremely divisive. So I don't know what he's talking. What are you talking about? My point is, don't be manipulated into abandoning your principles in the name of unity. That's my point. Don't be manipulated into abandoning your principles in the name of unity. We have this like bizarre thing where unity is this great value, because again, we confuse unity with being right. So if we're united, then we're right. I think no. Almost like never is that true. Or like they're different. They're different things. Don't worry about uniting or divisiveness. Just worry about being right. Just worry about the truth. Even if it's divisive, especially if it's divisive. Here's what we need. We need discernment. We need discernment. The Hebrew word for discernment, it means to make distinctions. It literally means to make space between. Isn't that amazing? The Hebrew word for discernment means to make space between, to separate things. Well, hold on. I thought we're all about unity. I thought we need more unity. Don't we need to come together? No. We need to have discernment. We need to distinguish between. Distinguish between what? Right and wrong, truth and lies. Oh, don't we just need to unite? No. Well, I don't know. About what? Around what? Well, about we need to unite around these lies. No. I have no value of unity. Unity, it means nothing to me. It's certainly not above truth. That's more proper. I'm not going to unite around lies. I'm not going to unite around what is wrong and then pat myself in the back, pat all of us in the back because we're united. That's not it at all. But that's how they want to manipulate you. Oh, you got to unite. Don't be so divisive. But the divisive thing is right. And the divisive thing is true. Yeah, but it's divisive. Great. Don't care. I have discernment. I make space between. I separate things in order to distinguish from them because they are different. It's about the truth. Many times when people are calling for unity, like the so-called reverend, they're not calling for unity towards the truth. They're trying to get you to abandon the truth. That's what when they're calling for unity, they're calling for you to abandon the truth. They're saying, oh, you and your doctrines, you and your dogma, you and your strict adherence to the truth, you and your principles, ugh, you and your virtue, you and your values. Come on, don't be so divisive. You can't vote for him. He's divisive. We got to have unity. Now, even in religious ways, you know, you hear people, you know, the coexist bumper stickers, or you hear people say, wait, what's the big deal? Christians and Muslims worship the same God. No, we don't. Not at all. What are you talking about? Like, no way do we worship the same God at all. Oh, but unity. We need to have interfaith dialogue. What? No, you know, I'm making distinctions here. Oh, but you're being divisive. Great. I'm making distinctions about what is true and what is false. Oh, that's so divisive. Just unite with me. Don't you want unity? Just agree with me and we can have unity. How do you have a discerning mind? Examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. Abstain from every form of evil. Well, it's not very unifying. So back to Warnock and his claim that being a Christian who supports Trump is a contradiction. First of all, God uses all sorts of people to achieve his ends. He's even using Barack Obama. But there's a big difference between the conservative who supports Trump and the progressive who supported Obama. I'm not going to say Biden here. Progressives don't love Biden, right? There's no like worshiping of Obama. But do you remember the of Biden? Do you remember the obsession with Obama? Do you remember this? Like, go back in time. Wasn't that long ago. Barack Obama was a messianic savior in 2008. The AP, do you remember they published this photo with a halo around his head? Like, it was a whole nother level. And they leaned into it. They loved it. There was a huge rally in 2008. And Michelle Obama, it was Oprah. And Michelle Obama said, we need a leader who's going to touch our souls. Who's going to make us feel differently about one another. Who's going to remind us that we are one another's keepers. That we're only as strong as the weakest among us. Oprah told the story of some book where this old woman, she survived slavery in the Civil War, and she would ask every child, are you the one? Are you the one? And Oprah said, I do believe today we have the answer to that question. It's a question that the entire nation is asking. Is he the one? Oprah Winfrey said, yes, I believe he's the one. Okay. We have more examples, but you remember this, right? Conservatives don't do that. We don't do that. We already have a God. We're not looking for a new one. So don't give me this deep contradiction. Don't give me this, we need to unite. No. Welcome back to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. The great Alex Marlowe, editor-in-chief, Breitbart.com. Alex, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Mike. Good morning.
And good morning to you. It's very early. I was in California the other day. I did the show twice from San Diego. And I was like, oh, man. It's early. I don't know how you did it for so long, man.
I don't know either. I have to say I've adjusted. And, you know, it's not the when I come in at 5 a.m., not a big deal. But when I anything before that is early, and starting at 3:03 and 50 seconds every day was something that I'll always be proud of and never want to do again.
I kept my alarm on my phone for the 2:15 wake up. Because it makes the, when I set it for 4:15, I peak right up at the 2:15. And yeah. I'm like, oh, well, this is like way better. Like I get to sleep in a lot. This is fantastic.
I just did the thing just now, you know, 45 minutes or so ago, where I woke up and I felt like, uh-oh, is this it? Is this the beginning of the day? Is it all about to unfold in front of me? And then I turned over, I looked at my clock and it was, you know, 4:22. And I was thinking, ah, this is so beautiful. I'm going to get to go back to sleep for another hour and a half. And then I realized, oh, no, wait a minute. It's later day. It's later day.
No, man, we ruined your day.
Roll out of the rack. No, not at all.
We're a part of this unfolding of the day. Yeah. Is it about to? That's a horrible thing to say first thing in the morning. Yeah. Oh, is it about to unfold? Is the whole day about to descend upon me?
Yes. Man. Well, you know, but being on the West Side and being the West side of the country and being in the news business, you're always behind, which is very irritating, is that the world is, you know, people might, everyone in the audience is probably familiar with Politico Playbook, which is this DC Beltway newsletter that is, it used to be edited by this guy, Mike Allen, who then went on to study to start Axios. And he would used to start writing the newsletter at 3 or 3:30 in the morning. Like, that was his trick, is he'd go to bed very early and then he'd get it. So that's, you know, midnight, 12:30, where I'm at now. So it's just sort of, that's who, if you're really hungry, then you're competing with those types of people. And that's...
Yeah, Breitbart does it.
Yeah,
it's
suboptimal. Suboptimal, yeah. I would say.
Yet it works. Breitbart.com has done a lot this week on the book Control Oligarchs.
Yeah.
By Seamus Bruner, and we had him on the other day, and it was great to talk to him and exposing these billionaires who already do control a lot of your life and want to control way more. What stands out to you about this book?
Yeah, a lot. And I'm reading it now. Personally, I'm almost done with it, so it's good. It's been in my brain a lot. It's good to talk about it. Seamus is Peter's right-hand man. He's his top researcher, GAI. GAI has got, I don't know, a dozen, maybe two dozen people over there doing research, and a lot of them help me with Breaking Biden, et cetera. And they're just top-notch people, and Seamus is at the top of that group. And what he goes through is essentially the connecting theme is this group of billionaires called the Good Club, people who literally assembled, I think it was in the 90s, and they got together and they decided they were going to basically save us from ourselves. They were going to save the world from humanity. And they're very anti-human movement. And he goes through methodically and looks at how these people use the guise of philanthropy in order to try to make the world bend to their will. And their will is always money and power. It's always what it is. And all the philanthropy is rooted in their ability to try to hide money so they don't have to pay taxes. And that's where it all comes from. And the centerpiece of it all, there's a lot of big players, is Bill Gates, because Bill Gates was a kind of a cold-hearted guy, and he was seen as an arch monopolist with Microsoft and just a hardcore business guy. And he didn't like giving charity, even when he was one of the richest guys in the world. And it dawned on him that the institutional left hated him for dominating with Microsoft. Like, the Microsoft was such a monopoly, and he was so ruthless. And he even openly talked about how he would overtake other companies and how he would create some sort of technology that they couldn't keep up. And then he would be able to destroy the companies that he was competing with, and just nasty stuff.
He's a robber baron.
Yeah, exactly. And he was, look, if you're a pure capitalist, maybe you like it. But the thing is, the people who were his buddies now hated it. They all hated him. And so he came up with his genius scheme where what he would do is he would declare he's a philanthropist. This allows for him to hide a bunch of his tax dollars into charitable causes, but it also allowed for him to curry favor with the left and with liberals and with the global elite. And it dawned on him that, oh, wow, I went from the most hated guy in the world for being the biggest capitalist to being the most beloved guy in the world. And now I'm, you know, flash forward to him being the, you know, the face of the COVID lockdowns and the COVID vaccine movement and all the stuff that, you know, people who believe in freedom hate and people who love totalitarian leftism and globalism love. And so that was, it was all by design, as all this stuff. It's, I'm sure the audience guesses that's where it would conclude. But he starts working through methodologically how various movements within the left, what the real motivations are. For example, take abortion. Abortion was a design for population control, seems obvious. But the people who bankroll the abortion industry it's not just people who woke up one day and decided that, you know, women need autonomy over their body or women need the right to choose. No, it's people who think the problem with planet Earth is humans. Humans are the problem. Like, we're the ones destroying the planet. And they believe fundamentally that there's a cap on how many humans should be here. You know, on the upper end, it's about what it is now, you know, 8 billion-ish. But on the lower end, it's, you know, 1 billion, 2 billion, insane numbers that will require a massive genocide to achieve. And so all of these people, from Warren Buffett to George Soros to the Rockefellers, they're all making money off of abortion pills, abortive fashions, birth control pills. They're all heavily invested in this because not only do they want to make money off of it, they actually believe that the world's better off with fewer people in it. And he just kind of goes through the history of examples like that. And it's just wonderful work. It's freaking horrifying, as is so often the case with so many GAI books. It's funny because they're the nicest people on the planet. If you ever go over there, and I have, just everyone is friendly and they're all bright and lovely individuals. And yet they put out this work, which is just all just horrifying. And it does make you feel like they are, it's not just an oligarchy, which I've talked about with you, Mike, many times. They are trying to control our lives, and they're trying to manipulate us because they've got these viewpoints on where the world is going. And they want to be in charge of it. And it's very scary stuff. You know, he covers Klaus Schwab a lot, who's unfamiliar to more people than he should be, who runs the World Economic Forum. He goes back into how the World Economic Forum got started and how it was basically they used a ruse that overpopulation and pollution is the biggest threat. And so we need to assemble all these people to fight it. But they really just hate humans and want to control them. And that's the essence of it. But you get all the detail from Seamus.
Controligarchs, Seamus Bruner, S-E-A-M-U-S. Seamus Bruner, Controligarchs is the book. And do the double. Get Breaking Biden, Alex's book, and then Controligarchs, and you'll be way ahead of the game. That's quite a foundational distinction between people. Yeah. Do you value human life,
right,
or no?
Yeah, and this is the centerpiece of In Breaking Biden, some of my chapters on energy and the economy, which is the key Biden economic principles. And this is where the controligarchs and the American political elite agree, is the goal, whether or not it's a pure goal like it is for, I think, dumb or less informed people, and whether or not it's an impure goal, it's a ruse like it is for, you know, the super intellectual elite who are all faking it in order to get power and money. Still, the plan is the same. It is human thriving now is secondary to something else. And to me, I just find that completely anti-human. I mean, if you look at our energy policy, for me, people are struggling. People are, grocery bills are through the roof. It is very hard to traverse from class to class. If you're middle class, it's never been more difficult to get to be able to afford a house. People have no ability to accumulate savings. There's so many things that are wrong with our current economy. And you would think that, okay, so what we need to do is we need cheap, abundant energy. Cheap, abundant energy lowers the price of everything, not just energy, but, you know, food, et cetera. And then it also gives people the ability to innovate. And that's really when people can break out from class to class and achieve the American dream. That's where I'm at, Mike. I'm guessing that's where you're at. That's not where the Bidens of the world, and that's not where the controligarchs of the world are. They're at, the humans are neutral to negative in the scheme of the planet. And what we need to do is we need to make sure we're protecting the planet now from humans. That's a priority. And I find that to be completely anti-Judeo-Christian. I find it to be anti-logic also, because I just don't know what's the point of all of this if humans aren't having, if we're not at our best. Like, what's the point of this planet? I mean, is it for insects? And I would like to ask that question of all the controligarchs. Like, do you prefer insects? And they're like, well, not really. We want you to eat insects. So who are we here for? Are we here for the giraffes? I love giraffes. I was just at the zoo over the weekend with all the kids. We saw a one-week-old giraffe. Incredible. I love the giraffes. But my priority is human beings.
Sorry, I was daydreaming a minute because giraffes are my favorite animal. So I'm glad you love the giraffe so much. But
absolutely best.
I am going to take the bold stance of saying humans are more important than giraffes.
So you would think that would not be a bold stance, but it is now. It is.
Do you know giraffes? Giraffes, they have this crazy mechanism in their heart that when they put their head down, their neck down, if this mechanism doesn't work, then like the pressure in their body would explode. So they have like this valve in their heart that keeps their body from exploding with their head. Plus the way they walk, they walk like both right legs at the same time and both left legs at the same. So they have a different type of walk than other four.
Wow, that's so true. I hadn't noticed that. But I have noticed it, but I haven't processed it. Yeah. I just find it fascinating that the average baby, infant, is 6 feet, 150 pounds, and can walk right away.
Yeah, they just pop right out, and they're good to go. Like,
yeah.
And then my other favorite giraffe fact, not really a giraffe, but the acacia tree that they eat from, when they eat from this tree, the tree emits some scent that sends a warning down to the other acacia trees to like release some toxin to prevent the giraffes from eating the other trees.
Yeah.
Like, what is that about? Like, that's crazy.
I
still don't care though. I like humans more. Is my
yes. No, but it's great. No, but I want to preserve. I want to preserve all the animals, but a lot of it so that we can enjoy them and observe them and learn from them and have them enrich our lives. Like that's. I think that's the biblical worldview. It's not that we hate animals; it's that we like humans more. And the fact that is not put forward, that these groups of people think that they're God and they all have God complexes, and you see some of the manipulations and what they're doing with biotech and what they're doing with pharmaceuticals. And I'm generally pro pharmaceuticals. I was just commenting the other day how I'm generally a pretty robust physical stamina and strength, Mike. And I don't say that to brag, specimen. Though of course it is. Though of course I do. But but I got allergies and I can't have cats and dogs unless I take a pill that costs me 4 cents a day. Thanks, Big Pharma, that I have to spend 4 cents a day to prevent my allergies and be allowed to have, you know, pets and stuff like in my house. It's a miracle. And I don't run super negative on Big Pharma relative to some of conservatives, but I will say that a lot of these control oligarchs were using their pharmaceutical investments to not help people or even high taxes, but it's really to control our lives and to control our lives via health and the health industry. And that's all creepy stuff, and it's all worth considering because we don't all have to join a tribe or a team. I'm on Team Pharma. I'm against Team Pharma. But that's kind of where we've gotten to. Like, I'm not on Team Giraffe or against Team Giraffe. I generally speaking prefer giraffes to no giraffes, but I prefer humans overall. Can I say something that I've been thinking about all week? Because I was at the Santa Barbara Zoo over the weekend, and I was giving a speech for Young America's Foundation, which I'm sure is online if anyone cares enough to go check it out. It's somewhere. But they got the lion area right next to the giraffe area, and these giraffes look succulent. And I'm just feels like torture for the lions. Like they're separated, but they can see them. They can see the giraffes. And that baby just must be looking absolutely delish to the lions.
Oh, man. What a cruel. You want to talk about cruelty to animals.
That's it. Like, imagine, it's like me, Mike, I'm going to have to do the whole work day today. And, you know, there's a bone-in ribeye, medium rare, nice sear on the outside.
And
it's just in the next room and I can see it.
Oh, that's great.
I can't eat it.
I'm sure you can smell it.
I can smell it.
Like, we need to form a conservative PETA, but we don't care about animals as much as we separate animals in the zoo so they can't, you know, we don't torture them.
It seems like torture. And it's not that I can eat the ribeye after I put in a good day's work. I will never be able to eat it ever. Ever. Never.
It's always out of reach. Oh, man. Brutal. Wow. I'm glad you're really speaking for you spoke up on behalf of giraffes and lions today. You're a real, that's what I'm talking about.
I am a conservationist.
I consider myself a conservationist. Yeah, you're like
an environmentalist. No. A conservationist, very definitely.
Good. We're going to talk to a conservative congressman in just a minute here. So I got like 3 minutes. Sure. But we talked with Tom McClintock yesterday and really got everyone fired up.
Yeah, great interview. I just checked it out last night. Wow.
So I can ask you what you think about it, but in general, the anger at the Republican Party, what is one to do with this?
Yeah, this is the toughest question. It's always the biggest question. I am very sympathetic to people who have no tolerance for what the Republicans are doing. I just don't buy into it at all that impeachment is some sort of sacred thing that we need to be protecting. Impeachment's a joke. It's a total joke. After what we saw with Trump, we should impeach everyone all the time whenever we feel like it. And because that's what they will do to us. And as I've said before, I'll say it again. If Trump gets reelected, he's going to get impeached a third time. I have no idea what he's done, but he will do it. It will happen. It's a guarantee. It's as sure as that lion wants to eat that giraffe, Trump will get impeached. So that's where we're at. So I like adopting the left tactics that have worked for them, and we need to get the energy up in our movement. Our movement is I don't know if Congressman McClintock, who I generally like, is aware of this. But the movement is suffering. It's their people are burned out. They're burned out on all the noise. They're burned out on not winning enough. They're burned out on the harassment. They're burned out on the cancellations. They're burned out on just the general tenor of the country and the division. And not to mention all the stuff that Biden's done, which has been horrific. We need something that's energizing to us. And I think that people need to be more mindful of human energy and to try to manage it. Republicans are terrible at that. They do a terrible job of managing the energy of their movement. And what that means is that the movement ends up, the talking points come from people on places like Twitter who are just kind of winging it. And a lot of them are self-interested and some of them are great, but it's sort of like people just have to show up at Twitter, see what are our talking points for today. And some of them are not very good. There's no cogency. There's no unity. And the Republicans, it's on them. And this is on the RNC. This is on the Republican conference in Congress to figure out where the energy is. We spent all this energy getting rid of Kevin McCarthy. And what did we get? We got the same stuff. It's the, which I said here, and I would have said it anywhere who would have given me a microphone, that the best case scenario is the House operates the same as it did under Kevin McCarthy. And now we're seeing the same stuff, arguably a little worse, what's coming out of the Congress now. So why do we waste all of our energy on that? That's going to demoralize and discourage long term. And it's time for us to start thinking in those terms.
I'm going to ask all those questions to Congressman Russell Fry coming up next year. Animal conservationist Alex Marlow, go buy the book Breaking Biden. And I don't think there's any animal talk in there. Next book.
I don't think there's any animals whatsoever, which is lamentable. And perhaps if they do a second printing, I could try to shoehorn a little
whole
bit
chapter in there just randomly about giraffes just in the middle for no reason, just aside. Alex Marlow, appreciate you, brother. Thanks for listening to Breitbart News Daily. We have a lot to recap on tomorrow's show. I want to talk about America first as it relates to not just immigration. That's the obvious one. The obvious ones are trade deals, foreign policy, and immigration. But let me write that down. That was good. Foreign policy, trade deals, and immigration. There's another aspect of America first, though, that doesn't get talked about. And it's, I'll just tell you, it's the towns. It's our towns. And what they now look like compared to what they used to be. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And Ben Stein will be here. Yes, that Ben Stein. Tomorrow, Mike Slater, Breitbart News Daily. We'll see you there. Spread the word.